quick reminder, if you could turn off the silence your cell phones, that'd be great. Let's start with introductions. Don, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Don Hardy with Bridger and Ben.
Hi, Gaither, Gaither Holmes.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Reyes.
Michael Overman, Olson Engineering.
Jeff Preston, Moss Reston.
Andrew Gunthorpe, PLS Engineering.
Greg Schaefer, Public Works Development Engineering.
Rosie Schell, Developer Engineering.
Matt Herman, Clark County Community Planning.
Boy Lebowski, Clark County Community Planning. Lee Gadford, Clark County Community
Office. Susan Swan, Rockwell Bank.
Okay, great. Reminder, the meeting is being recorded. It's going to be, the audio will be posted on the DEEB website. And then let's move on to review and adoption of minutes from 2 months ago.
I reviewed and I moved to adopt.
Second.
Right, got a move and a second to adopt the minutes. Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Upcoming events.
Okay. Yes, so under the Board of County Councilors, we have our standard weekly meeting with the county manager's briefing that is typically every Wednesday, 10 a.m. As noted there, that sometimes is canceled. So we invite you to check the county webpage for updates on that. Also, the typical Board of County Councilors hearing every Tuesday, 10 a.m., unless, as noted, typically the first Tuesday of the month, it's held at a 6 o'clock p.m. meeting. We have a hearing on August the 18th, 10 a.m., traffic impact fee updates. And then another hearing on August 19th, 11 a.m., is a Clark County Stormwater Code and Manual updates. For the Planning Commission, a work session, Parks, Comp Plan Update, and Shoreline Update, Thursday, August 6th, 5:30 p.m., and a hearing, Parks Comp Plan Update, Thursday, August 20th, 6:30 p.m.
Any comments related to those
questions? Yeah, go
ahead.
Greg, on the traffic impact fee update, do you have an idea what information will be presented?
I don't. Matt, could you...
So your recommendation will be presented, the vote to adopt the program as submitted, with the exception of the code language that would potentially remove the vesting. That recommendation is being forwarded to the board as well as the Planning Commission's recommendation. The two are different in that the Planning Commission did not recommend it. Sorry. Planning Commission recommended to present, to approve the materials as presented without the vesting required. They have a couple double negatives in there, but you know what I mean. We had a work session with them on July 29th. At that work session, they would also like to see Rule 1 and Rule 2 district scenario proposed at that hearing. The recommendation from both DEEB as well as the Planning Commission had one rule district proposed. So they would like to see two.
I'm sorry, I just heard you mention about the vesting.
Sure. The DEEB's recommendation on June 4th included there was a proposal to remove the 3-year vesting of impact fees. The DEEB recommendation was to not adopt that portion. That portion. Okay.
Okay. Any member announcements?
I just wanted to state I did attend the Board of County Councilors work session yesterday regarding the transportation improvement program update. Matt was there as well. Thought there was some interesting discussion. Again, I think what I wanted to highlight out of that is some concerns I have regarding the county's state of the road fund and declining the ability for them to deliver projects which help out the private sector. So I strongly urge everybody here, if they get an opportunity, to go onto the grid and review that PowerPoint. Listen to the meeting.
And Jamie, just as a side on that, is that due to the lack of collecting impact fees, or is that due to the lack of grants? What is the
Cliff Notes version, what I'm understanding is because there's no impact fees being collected on certain land uses, because that money is not being backfilled with general fund revenue, that fund is being partly was on a steeper curve downward, but because of some changes in the TIP project list that have had some projects fall out or move to a longer time horizon, the, I guess, rapid descent of the slope is as bad as it was under the prior TIP. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's been somewhat of a concern for a while now amongst us, so it's, appreciate that you were able to attend that.
So the high-level slide on that is that the revenue loss is coming from state funding and then the leveraging abilities of private share in the form of impact fees for grants and loans. That's kind of where that's coming from. Okay.
Please note that Marty...
Yeah, Marty's in the...
And Terry Jones.
He'll be participating for sure, I think. Any other announcements? Okay. First item on our main agenda is related to the retaining walls and setback issue. I don't see Jim here. Marty?
He'll be here
sure.
Shortly.
So okay,
I can open up a little bit.
Either that or we can bypass that for a short period.
Well, let me pass out some material. I only have 15 copies, so.
Okay.
Just kind of pass that around.
Jim,
Ollie, you want to talk to this?
Yes,
that's what I want. So, you guys can share a little bit. We don't care about retaining walls. So, Jim, here from the building official, he'll be joining us with some additional information that I think is kind of more of a standard detail on retaining walls that require county review or permit or inspection or some such thing. What I wanted to do was give the group some of the context here, and Terry, feel free to jump in as soon as I can get through this. So in the county code, under the, I think it's the landscaping and buffering section of the code 4320. There are all these provisions, and then these are establishing setback standards for retaining walls and fences. And you'll see that we have four different subsections, and then there's an exception under three that I've kind of highlighted in blue, where we're talking about retaining walls, perimeter of a plat, kind of at the site improvement level, and so on and so forth. One of the reasons for some of the code language we have, I think, dates back to prior to my tenure in community development, where there was a 14-foot retaining wall built somewhere by a builder. It was like became known as the Great Wall of Philida. The neighbor was really pissed, rightfully so. There might have been a sloping lot situation as well. So it only exacerbated this looming, Great Wall of Philida. So I think there was some code language written around that. We've kind of been, a few developments here and there. where we've had some questions about, you know, setbacks to retain, setbacks to property lines with retaining walls or maybe multiple retaining walls. So, you know, one of the issues that I see is that, you know, you have some amount of setback that becomes kind of no man's land. And depending on where you're at, you know, it could be an issue or it could be a non-issue. An issue would be, you know, you get some, you know, some kind of junk or trash or whatever between the retaining wall and the property line. And so, you know, that's a pain in the hindsight. So the other is, you know, you lose that land, the use of that land. So I'm just kind of opening this up for discussion. We don't have any set solutions or anything like that. One thing I thought about in just some email chatter is, you know, let's be clever about, you know, there are different situations out there, so let's not look at one size fits all, and kind of tackle it from that side.
Marty, would this only apply in residential zones?
Well, I don't think it says that.
I think it applies across all zones.
Yeah.
But I guess at this level, in certain landscaping, would there not be already a setback in industrial and commercial zones that would prohibit a wall from property line? Usually there's a lot for setbacks in commercial and industrial.
Right.
In the industrial or commercial zones, you know, the setbacks are typically regulated by what the landscape property is. I know the industrial code has changed now, so we don't actually need a perimeter buffer, to my understanding.
Maybe the landscape, you can go behind the wall.
Yeah, and I don't know how much. I don't know how much you're going to run into that. I mean, we hope not to have commercial and industrial on this kind of stuff, right? We want commercial and industrial flat. So
to develop a lot of that, you have to have the wall to make it.
Sure. Well, if you have that, right. But I think, you know, hopefully you have a little flatter ground to begin with. It doesn't really say in here other than C where it talks about flats and, you know, lots within a development and something about a flat. That certainly speaks to residential. So again, we need to be clever about any code amendments moving forward. And there is this idea of, and I'm ambivalent on the interior facing or exterior facing of the retaining wall itself. And I get confused at times, have to see pictures of this stuff. So there's that as well.
Yeah, I think the intent of that, as I recall, was sort of, is the neighbor going to see the wall or not? So
right.
I think the idea is that if you're an existing neighbor and a development comes in next to you and they put up a retaining wall right next to your property line, you know, you've got something looming over you now that you didn't have before. And you're blocking the sun, you know, various other things. My understanding is that it's sort of the impetus for requiring the setback, so you're not hemmed in as close. And that's why the exceptions are made to accommodate, well, if you're developing a lot, suddenly, you know, if somebody chooses to buy that lot, they see that wall right there. Who's getting hurt? Nobody. You know, the idea is to prevent something new from coming in from an unparticipating neighbor.
Can I ask you a question, please? Go ahead. Marty, this might just me misreading this, but under 2, would someone want an exception from the affirmative statement there?
Exceptions may be granted when written approval has been obtained from an easement holder.
Yeah. Why would you? You know, why would they want an exception
to go higher?
May be constructed within public easements. Why would someone want an exception from that?
To go higher. Right.
Yeah.
To go higher.
Well, Okay. Now we have actually the fence standards under the building code that have actually gone to 7 feet.
Okay.
Not six.
Thanks for clarification.
And then this easement thing, I do remember having an ongoing discussion with somebody about a fence or a retaining wall that was next to a stormwater easement.
Yeah, right.
Or a utility. I think it was in a utility easement with Clark Regional Wastewater. We said you have to get you have to get them to weigh in on whether or not they care about this retaining wall. So
thank you for explaining that. May I ask another question? I'm familiar with that wall out of flight.
Yeah,
it is. Okay. But would they not be allowed to do that under exception or? This exception would be.
Well, that's if it's along the right of way, but if it's private property to private property, it wouldn't fit.
Right. I'm not sure. I think exception D makes. If that's the impetus for this thing, I'm not sure that this exception would have prevented that. I don't know, but I'm just thinking.
The D was changed a couple years ago. So
that wall is right on.
That's on the right of way.
Yeah, it's right on the right of way, is it not?
I don't.
It's right on the side. Bridge is behind the sidewalk. It's 15 feet high or something.
Yeah, it's partly in the right of way.
So that's my only comment. Just are you achieving what you want to achieve there?
And that would be the case, I guess. I think the idea was that. When these changes were proposed, the idea was to focus on this big wall being ripped off right next to the neighbor.
Right.
So if there's a sideways wall, then nobody's going to have got 30 feet, 40 feet, or less, 50 feet, or whatever, a neighbor in that wall. So,
okay.
Next quick question. Just a quick picture. Maybe I'm confused and I'm just framing it for myself, but I'm not sure. What problem are we trying to resolve? So
I think one is
we're trying to
blackberry paths.
What's that?
Blackberry paths.
Blackberry paths.
Yeah.
So when you have a retaining wall and you've got like a 5 foot setback, no man's land between. 100% agree. I was trying to figure out what is that. That's what we're trying to resolve here in the code. Is there a real life deal that?
Well, I think there's that, and then there's this idea of how much of an exterior facing. Retaining wall, do you allow a new development to impose on an existing residence? How high can that be? And then,
right.
And then a lot of times people put a fence on top of that. So I got my lot, and a subdivision goes in the back of me, and all of a sudden I'm looking at a 6 foot wall and then a 6 foot fence. It's like, what the heck, you know?
But if you're looking at a 6 foot hill, and now you're looking at
necessarily.
No, I know. I mean, there's all kinds of. That's why I was asking which right. question. What are we trying to ask here? The no man's land yet? Yeah.
There's
or
that.
How high should the wall be?
It's both.
Okay.
It's both.
Okay.
Those are distinct, though. The interior piece, I kind of get. The difficulty is going to be the exterior.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like multifamily, if you've got a assisted living facility or Alzheimer's facility, I mean, that might be different. I mean, I'm not sure if it makes a material difference if it's on a major arterial. I mean, there's exterior versus interior
right.
elements to this, and maybe even on a subdivision. But if you're right next to your neighbor, you don't have an 8 foot wall, I kind of get that. But, you know, if you're like exterior, they put in a wall to demarcate the estate or whatever that is, I think that's a different situation.
So, Jim, you can maybe explain this detail.
Well, yeah, I mean, hi, Jim. I'm Jim, your building official. So this isn't a building code issue. It's really, in most respects, it's a neighbor issue, or it's a neighborhood site issue. So like the Philida wall became a neighborhood site issue. All of a sudden there was the topography, and then there was topography was changing. There's this.
That's right. That's right on the edge of the public right of way, is it not?
Yeah. I think it's going partly in the right
way. Question again, please. want to ask you this question. It's right on the right of way, right against the sidewalk, and it's 15 feet tall, right? So would not exception B have allowed that wall to be built?
That'd be I think what happened is they built the wall without any review or public comment relative to that section. So you might be able to build it. Shouldn't it be approved and it's part of the whole plan? And everybody knew it was going to be there as part of the subdivision. When a single homeowner then all of a sudden surprises the design with, and that's the same with neighbors. If you're a neighbor and you live there, and then the next thing you know, they build right behind you and build the great wall. I think that's really what, I didn't write this, so I'm just saying from a practical standpoint, that's what I think the objection is surprisingly tall walls out of nowhere.
Okay, so yes, this is a neighbor impact issue.
Can be, yeah. So the, notice the date of the little detail here is from October of 01. So we're talking about a dated detail.
I don't think this detail accurately depicts what the condition is either. In fact, I'm having a difficult time. We have an easement here and a setback. We have a public right-of-way, that I understand, but on the first page, there typically isn't an easement associated with a neighboring property. There's an easement between the property line and this, where you measure the setback. So I think just if everybody's looking at this.
It's cool. I was trying to have our plan reviewers to do a lot of details, do another version of this, but it didn't get completed.
Yeah,
this is. We'll talk about that. This not being this on the first page, it wouldn't be the subject property. It would be the existing property. The subject property would be up to the top in another version of that, and then. The easement is only if applicable. I think they put an easement on there as you could have an easement. There's nothing in here about an easement is required.
Right.
Right. Just sort of adding an extra
feature. Right. What one detail would show would be that if you have an inward facing retaining wall, you can build it on the property line. If it's 4 feet or under. Jim, can it be built on the property line if it's 4 feet and over? It's over 4 feet. In inward facing. So I build it and I'm not impacting another property. Okay.
As long as your footing didn't go into.
So footing and tie backs and everything else. That's the outside of the wall system.
Right.
Okay. On the flip side of that, if you're building a wall that is elevating your property and it's facing another property, it needs to be placed at the setback. The face of the wall, face of the footing, face of the retaining wall system needs to be placed at the setback. The issue here is that now that creates this area,
right,
and property line that. Now, I'm also understanding from a commercial and industrial standpoint, the property owner is required by the code to maintain their landscaping, and it can become a code enforcement issue if they don't later on. It still creates the blackberry patch or whatever you're referring to it as. What's that? Blackberry Alley.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that might, however, that also though allows for the buffering that would typically be, if there wasn't a wall there, along that property line, to be installed at the bottom of the wall to buffer and screen the wall itself. I think that was the point of that code originally. I'd like to go back to what Jeff said. Why are we discussing this again?
So it was the I had brought up a point of question was in regards to the fence setback. So a fence setback of 10 feet from the property line when you have the instance of a wall. So then you end up with the blackberry alley of sorts. And then also the other thing it creates is an issue of adverse possession. Given our state laws for land use, you end up with this. It's not the first property owner, it's the third property owner. Right. We see in residential uses, we see every 3 to 5 years someone sells their property, and so they end up with this, what's can be a potential mess of tracking whose property is what. And because it appears that the property line's at the wall.
I understand.
When it isn't. So.
Could you also have a fence, though, at the bottom of the wall at the property line to avoid that situation?
Yeah, you could.
I know you're having to do double duty. You have two fences now.
Yeah.
But that would eliminate that possibility of somebody planning adverse possession later on down the road.
Okay. I'm going to bring up something about that. I'm glad that Terry raised that, because I actually have this problem going on right now in a case, because the way adverse possession law works, a situation very similar to this. It creates a situation where if I don't think that the person claiming adverse in our case is going to be successful, but if they were to be, it can create a situation where you have non-conforming lots that if you're already built into the minimum size of the zoning.
I'm sorry, what?
You would get a non-conforming lot if somebody were to, in this situation, and this guy comes over here and captures this land area. And this lot can become non-conforming, and it's harder to get a loan on. It's not due to sale, and it's just a problem for future buyers and sellers.
You see a problem with it?
That's in addition to just the aesthetics of it.
And I understand the point being is that, I guess, this is the way I see it, is that the code is to protect the neighboring property from having a very large structure right outside, right at their property line. But my perspective is that in setting a fence back 10 feet from the property line, in the instance where you have a wall, and then this gap that ends up being in between with no requirements of any maintenance, it's going to end up being something worse to look at than if you have that fence up to the wall where it was a regular 6 foot, their property line type fence, which isn't allowed under current code. That's my concern, is that gap. More so, the adverse possession is another thing to consider, but the fence not being allowed at the top of the wall and that gap that's there, it's going to become a maintenance issue. You could end up with, like you said, blackberry alleys in the area. So that was a concern, basically, my concern on the code.
Is there a height limit now for, maybe that's part of the issue.
I think that's one of the issues we should talk about. What's tolerable?
That's exactly, I think that's the issue. I don't know how many people are building concrete masonry on the walls. We're not doing it in our neighborhood, but I kind of understand what that, if you built a more than 6 foot high CMU wall, it's
been. And then a 6 foot fence on top of that.
It's the combined height.
There's a combined height issue.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Whether it's a 6 foot, 8 foot retaining wall with a 5.5 foot fence,
right,
is the overall height by the concern.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody has an expectation that a neighboring property is going to have your. Fence, that's pretty common.
But a 6 foot wall and then a 6 foot fence, you're like, thanks for making a nice, I need a shed in my backyard.
I'm going to take a graffiti watch on the day and look,
No problem. The problem to me is, this is really perplexing, because there is no right or wrong answer. And so now we're getting into the area of subjectivity and what's acceptable. What's not, and I mean, this is it's really tough, because I'm just thinking through the situations. If you're in an urban situation, it becomes obvious, maybe obvious to some, that if you build a 20 foot wall, that's going to be looming over this home. But in a lot of cases, when we're dealing with land with the exact situation, you've got rolling hills, you're in a rural area. You're in the growth boundary, but you're in a rural area. You're flattening out those hills. In some areas, those hills are tree. Neighbors have hills and trees looming over them. The sunlight is horrible. You're cutting those trees. You're cutting it down. You're putting up a retaining wall. I mean, are we making it better or are we making it worse? It's entirely subjective. This is one of the most subjective issues I think I've ever come across yet in code that we're trying to objectify. And I think this is a major issue. And then, if you're going to build a retaining wall 10 foot or 5 foot off the property line, you might as well deed that property line to the neighbor. So it's just, it's a mess.
Or build two fences.
It's a mess. I don't know how we resolve it. This is a complete and utter mess. And it's a huge policy. It's a huge, in my mind, it's a huge policy issue because it's so subjective. I don't know how we put parameters around this. You're going to have to really distinguish between urban, rural, developing, or it's going to be a mess. So that's my two cents. I don't see how we wrap our arms around it.
What outcome do you want?
Other than
this information,
you want the problem?
It just came up on a recent project, so we were asked to come to deep and just kind of put it out there and see really what folks thought of it. Is there something somebody'd like to bring up? Just like Jeff says, you know, in certain situations it can become difficult. It's certainly difficult if it comes up when the subdivision's already been designed and approved, and then all of a sudden everybody has an idea, including the neighbors, of what's going on, and then a wall gets, you know, then a great wall gets built.
Fence get built.
Right. And it's sort of like, especially if you have one of those, you know, if you have a pretty small backyard, and maybe that's where you can also go. What's the relationship between the distance
right.
to the wall and the height of the wall? Does that help the subjectivity?
And yet we have the exact same situation on the interior, which is accepted. On the interior of subdivisions we
right.
build, sometimes people love them because it's privacy. Sometimes
right.
people hate them because they feel like they're being, you know, they'd rather have a window next door than a wall behind them. So again, it becomes kind of like.
But they're looking at that with eyes wide open. It just doesn't happen. In the you know, I own my existing lot, and all of a sudden.
Well, when you're talking 5-10 acre tracts.
Sure. Yeah.
Straight and then you got people that are against what you're doing and this and that. You're trying to do a grading plan and you're trying to do a retaining wall. They'll pull out all the stops to try to stop you if they just don't want it.
A neighbor.
If they just don't want you there, which I'm dealing with right now, not on a retaining wall issue, but they just don't want me there, and they're claiming adverse possession, so they're extorting us to try to delay us. Separate issue, but still one and the same, because again, if you've got this retaining wall and you've got that little no man's land, someone's got to own it.
I don't think anybody likes the no man's land.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah, especially when the courts did it really with a good faith element for adverse possession, it makes it easier for people to do land grabs than in Washington. Unfortunately, our legislature goofed with not awarding attorney's fees to prevailing parties, so they've got an incentive to be bad actors.
Mm-hmm. One thing, too, is a question that came up was if the neighboring property is supportive of an exception, were they okay with it? Is that something, or do you need uniformity of the code? So let's say the neighbor says, "Hey, I would rather have a fence here and not have this space in between." Is that okay?
I think that's a start. I mean, if the neighbor, then you start looking at the interior, and you're saying that's the eyes wide open. Someone said, you know, you're moving to. I mean, I think that's the start. Is where you go from the line. Yeah.
I think on
Who monitors that? That becomes kind of a lack of a better phrase, kind of a person, you know, popularity contest.
It gets hard. I mean, if you have two neighbors that are in agreement or whatever, and you've got a hill right between them, rather than building a big retaining wall, you might be able to grade it out. I mean, there's lots of cooperation that can go to avoid retaining walls. But that's, again, where you write rules, then you start writing rules, you're going to lose that cooperation. So this is hard.
Has anybody taken a look at what other jurisdictions do in this situation?
I think the difficulty is the rural area, if you're in Ridge Hill on estate lots, that is a different entity than I think urban.
Yeah.
Urban Clark County is a lot like Vancouver. I don't know what Vancouver's doing, but I mean, that's exactly what I'm thinking. If you're in a tight subdivision, what's the maximum height allowed? I mean, what is that? but I think the
urban, like infill, or maybe define it somehow.
I mean, you drive by on a freeway in Richfield, and you see those homes. Those are probably 12-foot walls on some of those when you drive by. You know, when you're going by that Battleground Junction, and those are not small retaining walls. But that's again the rule of the state.
Are you guys running the
No, not recently. We haven't had anything at all a major issue.
So, Larry, is there a maximum? I mean, what is the maximum for a fence on a neighbor's property? What is the maximum safety?
Six.
Okay.
And what it may just come down to is that the setback is there in order to protect the neighbor. And if you're going to build a wall, you're going to need to know what the code is, as you need to know with everything else that you're going to build out there. And you can either leave it fenced or unfenced down below at the bottom of the wall, the property line. And you run the risk of adverse possession later on. You go in there knowing that. Or you fence it, and you have two fences, and you plan on the expense of that. And the neighbor runs the risk of seeing Blackberry Alley. Or they could put up their own fence to screen it, or put slats in the other fence that's down there. You know, like Jeff said, how are we going to say, well, now do we look into stepping the walls, have only certain heights of walls that have to be stepped? Then all of a sudden you have sections in between the wall sets that are now mini blackberry alleys that are even harder to maintain than a wider section. And then that becomes a hazard because now it's elevated above 30 inches. You have to have a fence on those little step back sections. And so you start looking at solutions to this, it's like, but that creates another problem. And you almost have to come back to the original code that says, well, actually, maybe that's the best way it needs to be. Because if we're going to do something else, it's going to be like, you know, maybe they work it through. Hey, let's have it go through a type 2 review where you notify the neighbors when you're going to build a wall like that. No, we don't want to do that.
Just a clarification on this first page that fourth bullet, retaining walls over 30 inches above grade, they don't require guardrails out in the landscape. So
right.
Only guardrails relative to public sidewalks and other things.
Sort of
so
travel area.
That kind of got, I don't know, back in 14 years ago somewhere or another, they put that in there, but we don't require guardrails out in the landscape.
Okay.
But that's a minor point. The bigger point I didn't want to take away from that is, yeah, some people might take care of a nice stepped backyard with, you know, really nice garden stuff, and other people might just be.
And especially if they can't see it because it's down below their property. It's on their property down below them. Who cares what it looks like? You know, it would be easier to maintain if it's down below. At least the neighbors can spray the blackberries.
I don't know who said it, but one thing is if the neighbor agreed, I would see if the neighbor then would let you build the wall on their property and make it inward facing, rather than it be on the new development. If they're in agreement, then you build the retaining wall for them, if they're truly in agreement.
That means the entire retaining wall system would have to be on their property. Now you're eating up your, now the neighbor's.
But if the neighbor agreed to it and said, hey, or agreed to it because you offered it.
Yeah, then you could step it. Then the neighbor could maintain it. The effective neighbor could maintain
or
it.
Or he could agree to on his own property, build an inward-facing wall as tall as he or she
wanted to
tolerate.
Then the fence could be at the top, and there would be no risk of adverse possession later on.
I know we revisited this a few years ago, it seems like. I'm curious, you know, we've got the 4-foot wall, we've got the 6-foot fence. Was the intent of that to max, to sort of hold a 10-foot maximum face, I guess, that the neighbor would look at, or was it just...
I don't know if any of us in the room have that history. Yeah, whoever
maybe
decided
that was,
the 10-foot was
I
the
know
number.
I, yeah, right. And
sure.
You could build it. Should, one option, should the code just be revised to a 10-foot face? You build it. At least then you've got a 6-foot wall and a 4-foot fence. Or, but, I mean, we're splitting hairs. But, just
if that's your 10.
Yeah.
What's the minimum fence for life safety? Is it 36 or... at the top of the wall.
42. Out on a public way, 42.
Yeah, but
This is a private
setting.
So 36 is a guardrail that's that would be around like inside the home.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all sensing a struggle of is there a better answer, I guess.
Now that this has been brought to our attention, and I think we all understand it a little bit better, it might be worth now all of us
taking some time with it.
Yep. Once again, Mr. Halsey, just a lot of time. Yeah. I think that would be good.
Yeah.
I can think of one that we ran into at the Erickson Farms and Free site that was a difficult one. And I can really see this happening in slow areas like Kansas, which we call this an example.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kansas allows it. Yeah. So,
on the property line?
On the property line.
I'm talking about
there wasn't a height restriction, at least when I encountered that, I don't know what height restriction that they had.
Maybe we could get some photos or something, ship them around the photos to get.
Mm-hmm. Now back to the along the right-of-way line and the full right-of-wall. Can that still be done today, Jim? Can that wall still be done today?
It can in my
opinion. Well, it looks like it. I don't know where this fly wall is before my time, but if that fly wall is abutting the right of way, my understanding is actually maybe partly in the right of way.
They'd have to have a setback.
But the exception would allow that up to the right of way now.
Yeah, is there a 6 foot typically allowed lots of 6 foot PUE in there also?
Yeah.
So you'd have to get permission from the easement holder, which would be all of the utilities that that easement is granted to in order to build within that area, right? Mm-hmm. So at a minimum then they would have to build 6 feet or whatever PUE is on that particular plat. 6 feet back from the
If there is a PUE.
And on other platted lots that may not have had a PUE or on other lots that weren't platted, you may not have one. That means on here it says, somewhere in there talked about the easement holder.
That's under number two.
And as I read 3D, if you're abutting a road right-of-way or a road easement.
Abutting a road right-of-way or road easement.
There's not an exception process. You're accepted from that requirement, as I read it.
Right. Well, if there's a road easement, though, then that would automatically mean that you can't go up to the right-of-way, that you have to stay back. Maybe that's already solved in this situation here. And I don't know if the light of wall, was that a flat of lot? Do you know what?
I believe so.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, so they're in the PUE right now.
Well,
if there was a PUE.
Right. So there's not in every circumstance is there a PUE on the side of the street here.
Okay.
And I just don't know.
Just to finish that thought. Is the code now to have a 6 foot PUE on the exterior of all lots in all flats in the county?
I believe so.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So, everybody's going to kind of take a look at this, bring examples back. We can look at other jurisdictions and what they do.
Yeah.
And as you work through your various algorithms, one of the numbers in here, six foot that they put in all through here, was probably based on the fact that you could build a 6 foot fence without a permit.
Right.
But now the code allows a 7 foot fence without a permit.
So we should just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have parking.
Well, it's probably where the 6 foot came, as far as where people were grabbing numbers.
Okay, well, we'll do our part, then staff can check with us.
Examples would be great, and one consideration is it may make a difference on which road segment we're talking about as well, and what is the cross section of that road supposed to be. Separated sidewalks, non-separated sidewalks, and there's this kind of expands the potential into other discussions about, you know, is landscaping considered to be in that strip, or is it not? It might be part of right of way versus part of that property. So
right.
Other issues too. So there's
and I would suggest also a distinction between residential and other
and commercial. Yeah, I think so too.
You got an industrial piece, who cares?
And Terry, in your situation here, is it been mostly in a residential condition?
It was residential. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
So we'll revisit it in the October meeting.
That seems
general October.
Could I suggest this? The information comes to you when you deem it sufficient for time.
Sure.
You put it on the agenda.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, so we don't have information.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Next item is the county's webpage. Lee and Subu.
Local governments and state governments, and including federal government.
most of the federal agencies are already moving to Drupal. So we're not going to go wrong picking Drupal, so we stay with that. The next is to redesign the internet website, giving a consistent look and a services focus. For example, what I mean by services focus is, if you want to get a marriage license, nobody knows, the citizens would not know, they need to go to the auditor's office to apply for marriage license. They don't know that pet license is given out by community government. So we want to make it a services focus. They don't have to go searching for a specific department to get a service, but the services are present to them, so easy to access. And the next one is a branding. We do not have a uniform branding because we've been buying various applications. Some of them are off the shelf, some of them are built in-house, some of them used to build with the existing content management systems. So there's some look and feels are different in different places. So Lee will talk about how we're going to brand it uniformly so that people can easily see when they go to navigate from a GIS site to a community development site to an auditor site. So they don't see any difference, it all looks the same. The objective of the project, right now we wanted to build a team in Drupal and move all the content. There are about 27 plus departments around the county. So we wanted to take every content and migrate the content to the new environment. We wanted to do a test of that. And every department will do a sign-off. So that is a migrating thing. So that is one of our objectives we wanted to achieve. And we wanted to build a consistency across the site, which I already talked about, and the user experience. Improve the experience for the users so they want to stay in the site and get things done, so rather than getting bored of the site. Authoring tools, again, they're not consistent today, so we wanted to make it easier for the authors to post content. Not only that, sometimes somebody will author a content, but it needs to be approved by a manager, for example. So we can create a workflow. So as soon as they finish the content, they go to the manager who will approve and it'll get published. And it also, as so Drupal has certain features, like you can manage the publishing timing. For example, you can say, I want this content is ready to go, but not right now. Push it out at midnight tonight. So a lot of money to and I'll let Lee talk about when she's demonstrating the migrating and the streamlining the content. It will be our stage one. So we are already, Lee and Troy are working with the departments to do this as we speak. So our goal is to complete this by end of this year. In the stage two, you speak about the video. They're going to restructure because right now the content is very disorganized. So we want to migrate existing content and organize it. So both cannot be done at the same time because when we keep migrating, the new content is getting added. So it's very hard to keep it in sync. So we're going to migrate to stage one. And the stage two, after we go live, Lee and Troy will work with the departments and restructure the content so it'll be much easier for the citizens to find things. And I already talked about the enhancing authoring tools and a lot of online applications. So several departments have requested to put out their online services. For example, today if you want to do anything, there's a PDF forms online. People have to go and download the PDFs and fill out manually and mail them. So we want to convert all those, make it more automated, and create our online application and services. So the timeline. We wanted to do this presentation last month. Unfortunately, meeting got canceled. So the work already didn't start. So we are in the process of doing some migration. I believe about 10 to 12 department contents have been already migrated. We're still doing some testing. So between now and September, our goal is to complete the site migration. And between October and November, we will train the web authors and make sure that they are comfortable using Drupal. And we will test all the migration, and our goal is to go live by end of this year. And that's it. And we will demo a site that we have right now.
Okay, so the new site was designed with some key objectives in mind. We were, after making it an efficient user experience, services focused on what web customers were looking for and what they were expected to accomplish online. We wanted it to be mobile friendly so that the content would be fluid whether you were on a desktop, tablet, or phone. We also wanted it to be accessible for users with disabilities. Assistive technologies like screen readers are more adaptable to the Drupal and this more updated platform. We also wanted a really consistent and branded design throughout the site so that users and visitors to the site had a consistent experience regardless of where they were on the particular website. So let me walk you through some of the features. So the better experience, a better user experience helps build a good relationship with the community. So we've got our main masthead with the Clark County, Washington logo and brand. We have our main slider feature here, this large area. This will rotate between about three images at a time and will feature key services or information that we may want to have the community know about. Voting, new property tax, pet license, marriage license, what have you. We also have this services feature down here, which could be some of those same key criteria. This area will be a static feature that will probably change about once a month. The slider up here will rotate depending on kind of the timeliness of the news or the information. So we're working with all the departments within the county to specify and calendarize what items are going to be on that in some of those sections at what times of the year. Up here we have our mega menu. The first one, again, we talked about this a little bit, is we're really trying to enhance the user experience. So this is answering the question, how do I pay my property taxes? How do I license my pet? I don't have to know the specific department to go to. I can just answer this question for myself, and this drop-down menu organizes those services in an intuitive fashion. If I do have a little bit more information and I do want to go to a specific service or department, I can also access the information from some of these other drop-down menus as well. We have a universal search section up here. We also have the Find It Fast section. This is analytics, the top 10 pages or places on the website that people are routinely going. So again, that's kind of driven by our analytic information as to what places on the website people are frequenting. We have our news section here, which is kind of timely news. Board of County Councilor information here. And bottom masthead with, again, some more ways for people to search the site, our social media, and contact information. So for departments, so we talked a little bit about the responsive feature. So Suku has a tablet. I'm going to pass it on my phone so that you can see how the website will look on the various devices. So the site was built so that the composition will change if you're scaling down the size of the device. So you see how this information is reorganizing itself. This is we're able to build on the same platform the fluidity to change back and forth among from desktop to tablet to phone rather than having to have a mobile specific site, which is a whole completely different system. So a lot of the decisions about where things are located and how things are organized is based on being able to have this transition be helpful and efficient for people's use of the site, regardless of what device you're on. So this is an example of a department homepage. We again have repeated the slider. You'll notice that the mega menu stays here up at the top, regardless of, so that you still have access to all of that navigation throughout the website, though your identifier up here has changed to the department name. This again, departments will have an opportunity to have up to 3 sliders at any given time with that information rotating. It can be message driven or not, depending on, and it will link to another place within their site if they wish to do so. The Find It Fast area also will appear. This is analytics of top 10 sites, or top 10 most frequently sites for that particular department. So once you're on a department page, that key information is department driven rather than the overall website. We have some areas for key content and video to be placed. We have, again, general content area, and then navigation has changed so that it's an expandable system. So we've got 2 tiers where we can collapse and expand information as you go through.
Why isn't that section in alphabetical order like the other section is?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I think we... I'm not sure.
I mean, the hierarchy makes sense, and if you have it in alphabetical order, it makes sense. Why wouldn't that be consistent?
Well, I believe it is set up as to what the department has kind of allocated as more frequently sites that information that's a little bit more more frequently visited or.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing.
Yeah.
These two will always be at the bottom, no matter what.
Okay. Yeah.
But the rest, I agree with you, they should be maybe alphabetical.
Can you go to community development page?
Not yet. We're still working on that.
What's Marty's picture?
Hey, we got a picture we can put on there. Yeah, exactly. Oh, video.
Nice.
So this is popping into a little bit deeper into the sample department page. Subbu talked a little bit about phase one, and really kind of our phase one is concentrated on getting the entire county migrated over so that we're all on an updated platform and get everybody's content over and working correctly. So our initial content area is going to be this primary large section here. Maybe we can populate that with photographs and have something that's so it's not just a wall of text here. But some of the sites and some of the departments will have primarily text-based content when we go live at the end of the year. So phase two is Troy and I, myself, working with the departments to develop more robust layouts and authoring features and tools within the editing system so that there's an opportunity to make the compositions and the pages more dynamic with more images and have some more set layouts that you guys can just pick from that will help the viewer and the visitor navigate through the site more easily. Oh, some of the other features, we've got breadcrumbs here so that if you want to backtrack, you kind of know how you got to this particular page. That's a pretty common feature. And then you can kind of go back to the home page. So again, the goals have been to provide an enhanced user experience. We want the information to be easy to find and easy to read. We want consistent branding of that identifies the county services and fosters a relationship building within the community. We want it to be task-oriented, mobile-friendly, again, so that that side, that fluidity amongst the different devices that we're using and ADA compliant. So we thank you for the opportunity to come in and present this, and we wanted to open it up for any kind of discussion or questions.
I have some questions or comments. As someone who uses the website every single day, including the weekends, some of the things that I'd like to see on there would be... hey, this is my opportunity.
It is, yes.
As far as the online application, you're talking about the PDFs. Some of them are fillable, some of them are not.
Right.
I'd like to see the ability to have them fillable and saveable on our computers. The reason why is that oftentimes we have to make one little edit to an application form, and if it's fillable but not saveable, we have to fill a whole bloody thing out again. So that would be something that would be great to be able to do. It could be saved as a fillable PDF somehow. I don't know if that technology is even out there.
Yes, it is possible, but what kind of a form you're talking about? Is it like
an application form for community development and development engineering?
Like a building permit?
What's that?
Building
permit? Building permit too, sure, yeah. Any application
form? Our new...
That would be through our new system.
Right.
Okay.
From the final plat meeting, we're also looking for the same exact technology to work with the prosecuting attorney's office, so we have standard covenants and all kinds of things, fillable, saveable,
yes,
but not changeable.
You
can right, they're right, exactly.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. So that things don't need to be read. If they're done, they're done.
Sections are read only. Yeah.
Right. I already mentioned the alphabetical part. I think that's the, I might encourage you to look at doing that. Can you go up to the how do I portion? Click on that. Okay. I'm having a very difficult time reading the headings in there.
Correct. I noticed that too because of this background.
Okay.
If I bring it up on a computer screen,
it's a lot better.
Right.
Okay. And then the little dots down below.
These here. Dots. I think it's like a more.
Yes, I know. Can you just put more on there? Because my 75-year-old grandma may not know what those three dots mean, and she goes here and says, oh, they don't have that yet.
Like this?
Yes. Okay. Just have more dot, dot, dot. Instead of just the dot. I know what it means, but not everybody knows what those mean.
Okay.
And then the layout on the mobile devices, oftentimes we have to zoom in so we can click on something. Will that still be there? That's
no, that's what we demo.
When you're cleaning the windows, you can show a small screen. It's a reference case. You don't need to zoom like this.
But I will still be able to zoom.
You can.
Okay.
Yes.
Especially on the GIS side.
Yeah.
I'm oftentimes having to zoom in, and wait for that. The GIS side is very difficult to use on mobile. Terrible use on mobile. And we're using it, like you said, 60% now. It's going to be more. We're out in the field, we're trying to look stuff up, and we just can't get to it. Okay, good. Then we have that, because sometimes people have fat fingers and they can't push the button, so they have to zoom in to be able to hit the button. And otherwise, this looks great.
Okay.
Those are my only comments. Thank you.
I had a few comments as well.
Yeah.
I use the computer slightly less than Mike, but I'm using it daily as well. And the website, in some ways, works pretty well now, and this is great that you're doing this. I mean, I think the concerns, and this is, again, I know you're trying to cover all the services in the county, but drilling down to the permitting and land use and environmental, a couple of suggestions. One would be in the individual permits, having cross links for permits, because you've got land use now, there's engineering in a different section, engineering permits, and you have environmental permits in a different section. There can be cross links, even if they're not populated, like if you need engineering permits or environmental permits, just to have a button to click on to take you to a different page. That would be really helpful instead of trying to seek those out. And then just staff contacts under contacts, not just a general number, but like an entire list of people. you can actually contact with their numbers and emails.
We really like that with the city manager. That's very nice.
We already thought of using the staff contact page, so where you can go and search a specific staff, if you know the name, and you get a registration number.
That's great. And this is wonderful. I really would highly recommend working with department heads. I won't say what other jurisdictions, but I've seen changes and they've not always been positive in other jurisdictions where it was very easy to find things before. That's not so much now. So they went ahead and changed things, and now they're three or four layers down, and they're not the same as they were before. So the lens of the department heads would be really helpful.
We didn't have much time to show everything, but some small things, like, for example, on the top right, you see home and then subscribe here. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to offer people to be able to go to the page. It'll have all kinds of things that people can subscribe to. You can check boxes, put an email address, and subscribe, so they will be notified.
Oh,
I think it looks great too. One thing I've noticed a little bit, where I'm enjoying my weekends in the office, I've seen GIS tend to crash over weekends. Hopefully that might be a little bit more stable, but this looks really good to me. So.
On that topic, what is the cause and frequency of the crashing?
Is it just no routine maintenance that they're doing?
Don't ask me. Don't look at me. Marty? Because it seems like it's been crashing.
Oh, it's hard.
The new architecture, we have a redundancy built in, so if one server goes down, some other server will automatically pick up.
I asked the same question.
So it's the
thing. Just having... If that was the only thing done, that would be amazing.
Yeah,
it would be.
I don't know how personal you can make this and link it with cookies on anybody else's computer, but is there a way that you could do it? You already have to find it fast. Can you personalize that? So I'm on there and I'm going to the same place all the time. It sets me up my own personal little window that has those links right automatically.
I think for a fee, yeah, right.
Yeah. In order to do that, we have to have a login. So we don't know who you are, so we have
gotcha.
To make a login.
Right.
Then based on the detail.
I see.
It's possible to do maybe phase three after
a
gotcha.
For a fee.
For a fee. Right.
Platinum member.
That's not always
a reasonable fee. A person doing more data. That's
crazy.
Constant access.
Any other comments?
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Almost right on schedule. Parks Master Plan. Lori, quick overview on that.
Should I sit here or stand up here?
Yeah,
I do. Sit next to Marty.
Yes, do that.
Okay. Hi, I'm Laura Lebowski, Clark County Community Planning. I'm here to give you a quick update about the Parks Master Plan. First of all, I want to say it's a big picture document. We are not recommending code changes or changes to the park impact fees as part of this plan. Give you a little background reminder of why we're developing this plan now. I don't know if you all recall, but last year the county separated from the city, developed the Greater Forest Parks Division, which is under Public Works. Mm-hmm. And because of that, our plan that we had with Vancouver Clark Parks Department is no longer relevant. And first of all, there's two components. One, the State Growth Management Act requires local parks plans as an element of a comprehensive plan, which I will discuss a little bit more in a little bit. Secondly, there's the component of being eligible for the Recreation Conservation Office grant program. I don't know if you all recall, but a couple of weeks ago, there was an article in the Columbian about approximately $3 million of state grant funding that was distributed for some trails projects. They were awarded to the City of Vancouver, the Port of Camas, Washougal, and the Department of Natural Resources. They were for trails projects. The county could not apply for that grant because we don't have a parks plan.
Now we do. Now we're
working
on it.
We will. Right? We're working toward it. So, also, I want to mention that in addition to the Parks Division being created last year, we also created a new Parks Advisory Board. And they are a diverse group of volunteers, and they've been instrumental in developing this parks plan. This is a vision statement and a mission statement for the Parks Master Plan. The goals and policies were developed through an extensive public involvement process. Our public outreach included three open houses in March. We had an online survey. We have a parks webpage. We had stakeholder interviews with different groups, including Neighborhood Association of Clark County, parks providers, sports organizations, and trail providers. And I'm just going to give you the highlights of that public involvement. What was our feedback? And these are the major themes that arose during that outreach process. First of all, partnerships between the city and the county and parks and recreation providers and organizations. We have limited resources. We should work together to leverage our resources. Connect the gaps. We heard about more trails, more parks facilities, and connections, connecting the gaps in trails and parks. But also increasing access, more parking facilities, trail access, amenities such as benches and restrooms, but also an education component and marketing. Talk about what's available at different county parks. These are the key master plan elements, and they're largely dictated by the state law. We have to have an inventory of the parks, facilities, sports, and trails. This does not include the city facilities. We do a needs assessment showing the ratio between our adopted level of service standards and what is the county actually providing. Public outreach, which I mentioned. And then we have a capital facilities plan, both a 6-year and a 20-year list of all county projects. We bottom line is for the capital facilities plan, especially the 20-year plan, it's got to be on the list or else it's not grant eligible. So plan implementation, these are the challenges. This is the cost of our 6-year plan. This is the fee, park impact fee revenue we've collected. This is the estimated shortfall. One of the recommendations of the parks plan, and I want to emphasize this is a parking lot issue, this is something that would be follow-up, would be for the county to consider locking in a levy rate for the parks, the Metropolitan Parks District. Just to give you a little bit of background, the Metropolitan Parks District was created by the voters, approved by the voters in 2005. It's a junior taxing district, which means when we had the recession a few years ago, the revenue declined significantly. And locking in that rate would provide certainty for the Parks Division. To accomplish that, we'd have to go out for another vote. And that would be up to the Board of County Councilors to ultimately to make that happen.
So, Lori, one quick thing. With the estimated shortfall there, assuming now that we have this plan,
how much would be backfilled by grants?
That's hard to determine, to identify. But yes, that would enable us to
whittle that down.
In the parks plan, and Rosie, we emailed you copies, but there's also a copy of the plan available online. We detail all the funding options that are available in the grant programs.
The 2005 plan was, I remember that. And the kind of carrot and stick of that, which was awesome, is the parks actually got built. People voted for it. They happened. Will there be something similar here on the list of capital projects that would be, if it goes out to vote again, assuming that might be a possibility?
I would definitely recommend that. That's been my experience too. If you show people if you vote for this tax, this is what it will pay for, and then you go build it, it's a good thing.
Can I ask a question, Ryan?
Yes.
$38 million, that's the capital park only.
Correct.
Land acquisition, development.
Right.
Restrooms, park benches, and grass.
Correct.
Sorry. And so the maintenance of the new parks is covered by annual growth in the county fund, or what's the maintenance?
It's by the county fund.
Not a part of this.
Yeah, it's through the general fund.
Yes. Did we lose out with a collaboration with the City of Vancouver, some cross pollination, you might say? In other words, the parks are assessed on a per resident basis, right?
Right.
Some ratio per geographic area. So if we have a relationship with the City of Battleground, we gain anything from counting some of their park space, or they gain by counting some of ours? Can you cross and collateralize like that?
I believe you can, depending on what grant you're applying for, and this would be another advantage of the plan, is that and something identified in the public outreach is to collaborate with other jurisdictions.
That would still be a goal.
Yes, definitely. In terms of the public outreach, that was the number one thing we heard from all different kinds of groups, was collaboration.
So, Lori, the $38 million, the CFP, is that basically the remainder of the community parks and the neighborhood parks that was established some time ago? Is that just basically finishing that program?
Yes.
Piece, in particular the Vancouver Urban Growth Boundary, urban growth areas around the county. It seems like that would be an ideal partnership, kind of going back to that. I don't know how that would work if they're separate agencies. We're back to Hot's point about, I don't know how that could be formulated, but that seems like a win-win. I mean, I'm not sure if that will ever come into Vancouver, but that seems like it will eventually at some point.
Just to give you an example, we had a stakeholder interview with the sports organizations, and you have all these different groups. You could imagine, you have lacrosse, baseball, and soccer, but they don't have one large organization, so they're all coming, talking individually to the county or to parks or whoever, and one thing that I believe they all recognize is if they had one large group, and as one group came and talked to the county, or the city, or whatever, they would have more, be able to do more than they do now. And so that is one priority. I'm going to move on. Okay, here's our timeline. Meeting with you all today, and then tonight we have a Planning Commission work session. We go to Planning Commission for a hearing on the 20th. We have a work session with the board September 2nd. We have a hearing with the board on September 15th. I was talking about those two components of the plan. So the plan is to adopt this by resolution by the board September 15th. Because the language in RCO, Recreation Conservation Office, is that you can adopt a parks plan by resolution. And once we have that, that makes us eligible again to apply for state grant funding. For June of 2016, however, for our comp plan update, we will readopt the plan by ordinance as a chapter of the comprehensive plan update because we're required by state law to have a parks chapter.
So the level of service down in the parks plan, because it's completing the rest of those parks, I mean, that essentially is, that level of service has been looked at, and I'm assuming that's all that's needed to meet the level of service is not changing from the prior comp plan. Those parks will get built, will meet that level of service by being built.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. That does not change. So, click on this, but I would also, just to finish up, encourage you to go to the website. It's at Clark County, go to Parks, and there's a link to the update for the plan to get updates and to find documents that have been developed all along, including a survey and minutes, for example, from a Parks Advisory Board meetings. That's all I have.
Apologies if this question has already been asked, but what is different in this Parks plan than the previous Parks plan?
This is a Greater Clark Parks District plan.
Okay, so we have a catalog, of course. It was always one that we had with the city of Vancouver.
Correct.
Okay.
So Vancouver has one.
Okay.
And that shortfall of 26 million, is that likely to change? And there's a massive amount of residential going on. I'm assuming we're still collecting parks or pack fees.
We are.
Beautiful.
Yes,
so that helps.
It does.
And there's no proposed increase to the parking pack fees.
There's no proposed increase as part of this plan.
Okay.
As I've understood it, there's been funds for constructing parks, but what we don't have is maintenance. We do not have funds for maintenance. So, because of the rigidity of the budget to not use, have those dollars be flexible for maintenance, it's created issues for constructing parks.
That is correct. Actually,
resources all together. Yeah, for maintenance. It's tough.
Right. This is a plan, we have to have it. Bill Bierke, who's the head of the Parks Division, in the fall is going to approach the board about getting additional staff as part of the supplemental budget process, because that's something that's identified in this plan, is that they need additional staff just to work on maintenance of the parks that they have now, to have planning staff, a grant writer to apply for the grants.
What is the impact of not collecting park use fees into that shortfall? How has that played in? What part of that shortfall has not collecting park use fees been?
I don't have an answer for you on that. That's more of a Bill Pierpe kind of question because he's more with operation and maintenance.
Were those funds allocated purely for maintenance, or were they allocated for acquisition, design, construction, and maintenance?
I would assume it would be maintenance.
Just maintenance?
Maintenance. And then you also had, you have people who lived at the parks, mm-hmm. and caretakers, yep. to help with taking care of the housing. They are creating a Parks Ambassador program. I don't know if you all are familiar with the National Park Service, how you can... This sounds like, to me, a fun retirement activity, is that So anyway, the National Park Service, you can sign up and you get to live at that park, but in return, you keep your eye on it. Watch out for people and
a lot of cat posts.
Yeah, we're going to do a similar program with the Clark Parks,
right.
And that will help.
Would you ask Mr. Bierke to provide us some information
sure.
on what the lack of collection of park use fees has been.
Okay.
And what, if any, contribution that has been to the shortfall.
Okay.
And if you could forward that to Andrew, and Andrew could forward that out to the rest of us, we'd be very interested. I would be able to know.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, I'd be happy to.
There, I know previously, before the separation, there was some creative working with other groups, such as stormwater and treatment, and so there would be partnerships between different departments. Is that something that's being looked at now to help on overcoming the maintenance shortfall?
Definitely. I think stormwater facilities and utilities, I think, are a good opportunity. You can build trails when they put in, because they have the right of way already, and that's most of the cost really, building trails. Also working with the trails organizations and building trails, for example, Cape Horn. A lot of that was built by volunteers.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
So that's a big part of the plan, was talking about leveraging volunteers and working with different organizations.
Yeah, and sometimes it's, I know for on the volunteer side, it can be very restricted in trying to get into it and be a part of it and
right.
Close within it. And so I think as much as that can be made public and ease the process, it can help on the maintenance side.
Right. Actually, I know Bill's been working through that issue in terms of liability.
Yeah, that's a problem with volunteer board.
Yeah, and they have a volunteer board member also.
Cool. Lord, can I ask a question? Just on the sheet right here, it says lower priority.
Right. So it's a little different from transportation. For transportation, you have a six-year TIF, and it's funded. Parks is a little different. The six-year list are the priority projects, and then the 20-year is that. I mentioned that big list. We have to have every project.
All this. This
whole thing.
It's the 20-year list. Right.
If it's not on the list, they can't apply for a grant for funding.
I must have missed the six-year list.
Yes, if when you look at the parks plan and there's a copy there, those are the high priority projects.
Low and medium, high is on a different list.
Right.
Thank you.
We had a lot of disc golf people show up.
Oh, here it is. I'm sorry, I just didn't look. Right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Somebody was telling me that Leverage Park, which is. Yeah, 39th, sorry, near my house, that it was like falling into disrepair, that the disc golf could draw a disc golf course.
Yes.
And become wildly successful. They do a very good job of making sure that the activity is happening.
Yes, disc golf has become very popular. We've heard a lot about putting in disc golf, and that's true.
People are putting up the, they're asking neighbors, and they're doing it in neighborhoods.
Disc golf,
yeah, in my neighborhood. I was driving through there one day. I live right across the street, essentially, from Safeway in Hazeltown. And right to the neighborhood, I saw one of the baskets in 71. And then one day I saw the group coming down the street. I'm like, do you just put them in the boat? Yes, the people, we can put it in the yard. And they're movable, you know, so they put them out for a while and they take them out and move to another neighborhood. It's something that we used to do in college. We just get a light bulb or something like that. I thought it was cool.
Yes. I learned about all kinds of little subgroups, like the pump track people and
the what?
Pump track, the mountain bike people jumping over things and flipping and stuff like that.
Parkour.
I learned about parkour. I did not know about parkour.
Yes,
it is.
You mentioned about, I guess, the new membership of the Parks Advisory Committee when the change was made.
Yes.
Is there a tie between the membership and the geography of the Parks District? Is that a criteria that they've got to live somewhere within the county?
I believe they're supposed to have a diverse geography, but for example, the chair of Parks is Kelly Putney. I believe he's still. He lives in the city of Vancouver,
okay.
But the co-chair, Barbara Anderson, lives in Salmon Creek. But it's a pretty diverse people from the rural area, people from the east side.
Okay, so it's not like they have to be in unincorporated Clark County or anything like that? That's not a requirement.
No.
Great.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't think we have any public comments on the bike out there. any other deep comments before we adjourn? All right, great. Let's adjourn. We will see you guys in September. How was your
2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good.
Not currently.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
I'll take this too.
Bye.
The stock.
Oh. You're back to the letter, though, right?